Science Faction is for adults only, and the cool kids smoking behind the racquetball courts.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to Science Faction, the only show where a scientist, a comedian, and a comedian scientist come together to discuss science comedically.
Hello, and welcome to Science Faction 249, Science Faction Parapsychology.
This is a nod to me, because as we all know, I am a spiritual medium, and I respect you, Bobby, for finally including a science that I am an expert in. Also, I believe the tie can now start going to me, because
now
I am
you're the scientist of parapsychology, except it would be a parascientist, which would actually mean...
Yeah, it's like the Paralympics.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Well, it would mean that he would not only not get the tie, but seemingly it should deduct a point, so even if he wins by one, it would technically be a tie, which would make it a loss.
Wait, for... For being a scientist.
Yes, exactly. Because if you're a scientist, you win the tie. If you're faking a scientist, you should get a minus point.
But I'm not faking a scientist. I am a spiritual medium. There are records. I have demonstrated this ability, I would say, countless times.
I believe it's actually been proved false 100% of the time. In fact, parapsychology is the study of paranormal and psychic phenomenon that defies conventional scientific explanation. Things like telepathy, precognition, telekinesis, out-of-body experiences. Basically all the bullshit.
So some of you might
be... maybe bullshit.
Maybe
we're
bullshit.
Suspending disbelief here, right? Yeah.
Bobby making this science faction parapsychology, is, in my mind, I'm thinking Bobby says InfoWars is now off iTunes. they're looking for an audience.
We're going to try and grab all those Alex Jones people.
Because all that runoff InfoWars pee.
Well, basically, it's like, think of like cryptozoology and other things. Just the fact that they have kind of a weird basis or a seemingly magical basis doesn't mean we can't scientifically investigate them. So there is a real science behind looking at things that aren't necessarily scientific. And it's possible to have a reasoned scientific outlook on seemingly unscientific ideas. So absolutely, there are people doing legitimate research in this area, because if you don't have that, how would you ever know it's illegitimate, right? If you don't have people investigating whether or not telepathy is real, telekinesis is real, how could you ever reasonably say it's not real?
It's almost a more important place to have science is when you have a lot of doubt. Like, you need to be able to separate the bullshit from the what is reality.
Exactly. And most of the quote-unquote parapsychologists are the type of people you see on the very inappropriately named History Channel who are doing complete BS. You know, they're going through a dark room with night vision cameras and somebody tosses their wallet and goes, "What's the noise?"
Hey, hello. Alex Jones here. I was wandering by and I heard my crazy detector went off.
Your crazy detector went off.
Yeah, and so I came running in. I kicked in the door. And
part of you tingles when that goes off?
It's the same part that makes frogs gay. Now you got my ear. I'm just going to be in the back of the room listening now. But hey, Alex Jones is the fourth in the room
Keep your shirt on. Do us all a favor.
I'm a red-blooded American man, and I will fight you. I will fight all of you. In fact, clone yourself 10 times, and then it'd be a fair fight.
What's interesting, though, is parapsychology does have a very important part that it has contributed to other sciences, and that is the idea of very strict control. So what we do to set up an experiment, just in regular psychology, to make sure we're objectively analyzing a specific thing, a lot of the controls that we use to do those experiments come from parapsychology, because through the time that it was studied by some very legitimate organizations, including Stanford and Duke and Harvard.
InfoWars.
And not InfoWars. Through the time it was studied, there were so many people trying to trick the researchers that they would sometimes be successful, and the researchers would be like, "I don't understand. I guess these people are telepathic." Until we started realizing, no, you have to have such strict controls, because there are bullshit scam artists out there. And those bullshit scam artists made science up its game and come up with better controls, things like double-blinded
scientists
experiments.
Scientists are not used to bad actors.
Yeah.
Like, we're all generally trying to get to the truth. And so when there's someone who isn't like that, you're like, how do I deal with that?
Right. So parapsychology is actually, even though we've never proved any substantial parapsychology effects, nothing like that has ever been shown to be true. In fact, all the research seems to conclude over and over again, it's total BS. But just doing that research and investigating it for the past 150 years has led us to think of really strict controls that allow us to better do real sciences and better do things like psychology.
When you say controls, are you talking about like cognitive biases and that kind of thing?
Yeah, so
talking about the controls of the mainstream media all around and how we're a conduit of truth right here in Science Faction, a.k.a. InfoWars like.
I thought you were going to be an impartial observer.
Just take.
I always am, Bill.
Just take something like a double-blind experiment. At some point, they realized in the 1920s and 30s that some of these con men were seeming to come up with results that made it seem like they were telepathic. What they were really doing is doing really good cold reading on the experimenters who didn't realize that they had subtle subconscious cues that were cluing the people in as to what would the actual answer was. So when they would ask the question, they'd be like, so is it A, B, C?
How many fingers am I holding up behind my back?
Right. So that made them switch to a double blind type thing where that person did not know the answer. Then all of a sudden the effect went away. So those type of controls are in place nowadays because we were doing this parapsychology research, which is really interesting to me because it proves that even if you're studying something that is total BS, you can still get something good out of it that can help us study non-BS things later on.
You're describing the process of making clever Hans, you know, that horse.
That's true.
That horse.
That was a great example. That was a horse that could supposedly do math and everything. Yeah. In fact, it was just reading its trainer.
Overnight, you turned him from the smartest horse in the world into just some asshole.
Yeah, that's just some horse asshole.
Some very empathetic horse asshole.
Parapsychology is actually included in the AAAS, which is the American Association for the Advancement of Science. It's basically the largest scientific organization. And they have a parapsychology branch, which was, by the way, brought there by Margaret Mead, one of the most famous anthropologists on Earth. She insisted it get included in there. She championed it in there. So it's actually technically part of probably the most prestigious scientific organization in the world, includes parapsychology as one of its research areas.
But now that we know that parapsychology is a joke, once you get this title as like being Supreme Court Justice, you just get it for life.
You got to keep studying it. Here's the thing. You can't just write everything off as a joke. You always have to continually do it. One of the ones that are constantly studied now is out-of-body experiences. So people say, I had this out-of-body experience. I know I was out of my body. How do you explain it? So what they started doing is in ER rooms, parapsychology researchers who were, again, using good controls, someone would say, yeah, we have these patients who come in and they say they're floating above the operating table. So instead of just taking their word for it and saying, well, what did it look like? Well, I saw my body down there. Okay, well, you saw that when you were coming into the operating room. What they did was really smart. They took these cards and would put like either a word or a picture of it and put it on top of shelves and stuff in the operating room. And then they'd say, what did you see? Well, we looked down. Can you see the shelf? Yeah, I can see the shelves there. Okay, great. What's on top of it? Some books or something? All right, there's a white placard. What's on it? Nobody has the answer, right? So we're still doing these
always
experiments
say dick.
To this
day. Always answer dick.
Someone's probably drawn a dick on it anyway. That's the idea. I like that. That's a pretty good one. In the 1950s, the CIA adopted parapsychology research program called Stargate, which they ended in 95 when it was determined to be a complete waste of money and when they couldn't re-sign Richard Dean Anderson to another season.
Beat me to a Richard Dean Anderson joke.
But dosing people with LSD wasn't...
Right.
A waste of money.
No, not at all. That was you guys might have heard of the men who stare at goats and the other John Ronson stuff. Because again, they didn't know. They're just discovering nuclear energy, this thing that they didn't know existed 20 years ago. Maybe somebody has telepathic powers and the army would like to know about it. So they did legitimate research to study it and thought it was
complete bullshit.
And a lot
of goats are dead.
Yeah.
Well, thank you very much, Bobby. Thank you for taking a stand against scam artists out there. Speaking of scam artists out there, you can trust me, your buddy Alex Jones. Buy Alex Jones Virility Serum. For all of you pussy men out there who want to score chicks like Alex Jones, Alex Jones Virility Serum, $99 a month.
Technically, parapsychology is still part of the AAAS, but almost all legitimate American institutions, Stanford, Duke, Harvard, have abandoned research, which is now carried on in America only by privately funded fringe groups, but is actually still more mainstream in Europe in some of the mainstream research organizations. So in that sense, it's kind of like soccer, you know, like big in Europe. Some weird people do it here. That's about all we can say.
It's a lot of lords, I imagine, like British lords. I don't choose parapsychology.
There's some fundamental underlying questions that you'd have to answer if any of it was found to be true. Like, what's the mechanism of action? If we're talking about telepathy, how can one brain communicate directly with another brain without any visual or auditory or scent cues? How does that even happen? Is that radio waves? If it's radio waves, why can't we pick it up with an instrument? You know, any form of communication that one brain can have to another would have to be able to be intercepted by something else that's not a brain. If it's an actual physical wave that is going out into the world, if it's Bluetooth or whatever it is, we'd have to be able to measure it and see it outside of just another brain. If it's telekinesis, how do you explain the fact that you're violating the laws of conservation of energy? You know, what force can be acting on that thing? How could you literally have a force that just comes from your thought? There is some basic physical principles of the universe that have to be defied for that type of stuff.
Upend the standard model. Maybe there's right. a new force particle.
Yeah, but even then you'd have to explain how that fits into the broader
right. yeah,
model
it would
of
be
physics.
A whole big shit.
It wasn't telekinesis at all. Our experiments have shown that it was actually an invisible lab assistant. Nothing to see here.
It just seems it's like a nonsensical, magical thinking. But without people actually investigating it, we couldn't make that claim. We couldn't say that if we hadn't done the proper investigations and looked into it. It's the same reason you cannot definitively say there are no leprechauns, right? Because we can only say we've never observed leprechauns. We keep looking for leprechauns. We followed this fucking rainbow. Can't say for sure. But if you had leprechaun researchers all the time around the globe, nonstop looking for leprechauns, signs of leprechauns, tracing rainbows down, we would have a better basis by which to assert that leprechauns don't exist.
Hello, Jane Goodall here. I thought I'd make an appearance just because I've taken such a slacking on the show for my belief in Bigfoot, but I'll take everything you've said today without people like me out there. How would you guys not know how wrong you are about Bigfoot existing?
About Bigfoot existing? I guess we never would know about whether or not we were wrong, Jane.
Right, well, I thought I'd come and rub your nose in it. Good all out!
And speaking of insane primate researchers, I am your host, comedian archaeologist Robert Timothy, and with me as always is my comedian, Mr. Damian Mercado. Damian, how are you doing this afternoon?
Doing great, and I actually respect that you have not acknowledged Alec Jones' presence in the room.
Yeah, he is just kind of sitting there, like, snorting out
of
his nose.
Sort of like a gorilla.
Gay frogs!
And our scientist of the afternoon, Bill. Bill, how you doing?
I'm a little disappointed I wasn't on the tribology episode.
Oh, tribology. That's right. Yeah, yeah. Was it tribology? Is that how it's spelled?
Tribology,
okay.
Yeah.
I was Damien said trib was the porn synonym.
Yeah, I didn't
right.
know that this
well,
was okay.
tribo,
science.
Tribo meaning to rub in Latin.
There we go. So that that would be because you are
I was a practicing tribologist a couple of years ago.
Wow.
Actually.
So you did the lesbian stuff that David was talking about. Yeah.
Tons of genital friction.
I'm a little more sexually repressed now.
Yeah, I guess so.
We were actually rubbing steel and coated materials together to produce a lubricious wear material.
Interesting.
It's called diamond light carbon. You can look it up in nature.
So you were studying the friction that occurred between those two.
Yes.
Interesting.
Yeah. Specifically, the reduction in friction after the wear began. But that's a different topic.
That's a whole Mew issue. Yeah. Yeah, I know
so,
what you're feeling.
The reason that I, other than I listened to the show, the reason I know about that is my dad brought that to my attention. And it was my dad's birthday this week. So I'd like to give you a shout out, Papa Conacher.
Congratulations for raising a son who's able to make a living only studying lesbian porn. If you guys want to make a living studying lesbian porn, go ahead and check out our website at www.thescienceaction.com, where you'll find the links to all the articles we cover here, as well as some we don't get to. Please go ahead and subscribe to us on Podbean. We have, for the past 2 months, been on Podbean's feature page because we just keep getting more and more followers. We love every one of you guys. Thank you so much for listening. Again, we don't advertise. We don't ask for money. We don't have a Patreon. All we ask is that you tell a friend, you share it with them, put it on your Facebook. When you find something funny that we do, just put it online and have people listen to us. We love you guys for it. We cannot believe how much the show is taking off. We're really, really appreciative. Thank you for all of you fans out there who are making that happen.
And since I feel fairly confident that none of our listeners for the show from 5 years ago when we started till now have consisted of my friends or family.
Right.
I can feel confident saying I love everybody who listens
to
this show.
All right, let's move right on to science articles.
From molecules to particles, this is Science Articles.
All right, article number one, a very interesting one that seems to get dramatically underreported, if you ask me, probiotic problems. So this is actually a fairly important health warning that everyone listening should know about and tell a friend about, most importantly if you have gut issues. So this is a really, really interesting cautionary tale of something that we don't necessarily think of as a dangerous drug or something we need to moderate. We just think of as water, as something that's good for us in almost unlimited supplies, and that's probiotics.
We think of water in the same way we think of probiotics.
Yeah, yeah.
There'll be wars fought over probiotics one day.
That's right. Yeah, like, that whole Mad Max was based around the fact that they couldn't get probiotics.
Welcome to the wasteland. The
Isn't microbiome there a water wars. World. They'll have probiotic or yogurt, yogurt world or something like that.
That's better than shit world. Yeah.
So we've talked before about your gut microbiome. That is basically the system of flora and fauna that live inside your colon and your large intestine that help break down food. They create a lot of the chemicals in your body that later affect certain things. We found neurological connections, meaning that it affects your brain health and well-being. It affects the chemistry of your body. It affects a lot of things. This is like a huge new form of study that is really opening up all these different areas of health. We've seen probiotics become a big deal. You eat essentially different bacteria to try and seed this gut. Things like fecal transplants are now a big deal in extreme cases because that is the best way to then seed that gut with new bacteria.
So when you say probiotics, is fecal transplant counted under the umbrella of?
Not usually. Usually probiotics are taken orally, but we do have fecal transplants, which is the other side of that. But basically think of this system of bacteria, I think sometimes it includes funguses, everything like that, that is in your guts that help process food and really play a big role in things like depression, things like cardiovascular health, a lot of other things. We're finding more and more every day that it's really important. And because of that, we advise people to take probiotics, especially when they have something like antibiotics. They take antibiotics, it clears your gut out of that good bacteria. We need to reseed it. Probiotics are promoted a lot. A lot of people just take them regularly, like a daily vitamin supplement.
But we have actually covered on this show, if you go back far enough, fans, please feel free, that probiotics are bunk, aren't they?
No, not necessarily. No, we do need probiotics, especially in cases where you clear out your gut with antibiotics. The issue is most over-the-counter probiotics, especially the non-refrigerated ones, essentially get eaten up in your stomach. Your body digests them, the stomach acid kills them, and very little can get out because your gut's already pretty well established. The bacteria there are well established, so the new invaders have a hard time setting up a colony. However, if you got wiped out by antibiotics, so you don't have a lot of good gut bacteria in there, you take probiotics, and sometimes stuff gets through, whether it's in yogurt, it's in over-the-counter probiotics, kimchi, that kind of stuff. It will get through eventually. It's just that the vast majority of them, when you look at the side, it'll say, 3 billion bacteria. The vast majority of those aren't getting through to your gut.
The first thing I note from what you said is that Jamie Lee Curtis lied to me.
Yes, that's right.
And secondly, couldn't I take that same thing of Activia, right? Fill it, put it in like a small bag.
Yes.
But like put a small puncture in it. And then hopefully that puncture just explodes all the way. So I just get that Activia blast. Post-stomach acid.
Yeah, if you can get it through your stomach is what you're saying.
I'm smuggling. I want to smuggle probiotics.
Well, again,
wrap it in rice paper that dissolves in your stomach or something.
If you really want to get into it, fecal transplants are the way that you want to seed your gut. That's the most effective way you can get the most.
So put shit in a bag and swallow that bag.
No, we're going to talk later. But what this study has found is it might not be all good. In fact, probiotics might actually cause some damage. So all of this starts in a really funny way, which is that we had a researcher / physician who got some complaints from one of their patients that, man, the second I eat food, I immediately get bloated, and I suddenly can't think. I feel like foggy and loopy.
Yeah,
they call it foggy brain.
Brain fogginess. Yeah. Which, when I first read this article, I was like, oh, okay, so like after lunch, you're a little lethargic, and you don't, like, you can't do math as well.
Right.
But this is like way more severe than that.
And it might even be the seeds of that particular thing. That might
Perhaps.
Be a
yeah,
smaller
yeah.
version
just
of this.
An extreme version. But these people were reporting really extreme symptoms, had to quit your job because you couldn't think straight.
Some of them were saying they literally didn't feel safe to drive right after eating, that kind of stuff.
You're not challenging yourself enough. You're not drinking or smoking enough before you drive. You got to.
Extreme fogginess, that kind of stuff. So it started with one woman displaying these symptoms, and she even said, the doctor didn't believe her, and she's like, watch, I'll come and eat like a piece of bread right in front of you. Immediately,
and
she started
fart right in your face.
You get these probiotics. Immediately, she started like basically bloating up. Like he's like, I've never seen this before. He knew she had diabetes, and he asked, have you been taking, just out of curiosity, have you been taking probiotics? And she had been. What he realized is, now the probiotics are meant to colonize the colon and your large intestine, which is a little bit lower down. But sometimes people get bacterial infections or out-of-growth bacterial in their small intestine, which is right after the stomach, and that's really bad for you. You don't want bacteria growing in that particular part. It causes weird gas issues. It causes a bad distribution of how you break down food. It's a bad thing to have gut infection there. And what he realized is that certain people, like people with diabetes or particular what they call motility issues of your guts, stuff goes through more slowly. What that means is this woman is having those bacteria that are supposed to be lasting, you know, whatever that capsule is that's supposed to last all the way into the colon, is getting hatched essentially in the small intestine. And because of that, they're getting out of control bacteria growth. That's what's causing the sudden bloating. And he's like, what's causing this fogginess? He tested her blood and found D-lactic acid, which is a particular byproduct that some of these probiotic bacteria produce if they're growing out of control in a place where there's no other bacteria fighting them.
They produce it regularly, but it's the acidosis is like an extreme amount of it, right?
Right. And not only that, but if it's in the large intestine or the colon, it's competing with other bacteria that don't produce the D-lactic acid. Right. When it has colonized completely the small intestine, that's all that's there. So you're not getting a touch of D-lactic acid, which we said might be responsible for, you know, the lethargic after lunch feeling.
Yeah.
They're getting a rush of it. And it's right up there in the small intestine. So it's the first thing to get that food. It's getting to digest a lot more of those carbs and sugars, creating this D-lactic acid, making people foggy, unable to think, bloated, very full feeling. It's having a serious negative effect. And it might be from too much probiotics.
Question. D-lactic acid, is it the same thing as lactic acid?
It's a form of lactic acid.
Okay. I think there's D and there's L. I don't know exactly what the difference is, but they measure them. One's in the blood, one's in the urine.
All right. Follow my train of thought here.
Yeah.
Okay? You get lactic acid buildup when you work out, right?
Uh-huh.
It's that destruction of the muscle that makes your muscle stronger, so it bounces back even better than before, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Motility issues usually means, if I'm wrong, that the muscles within the intestine aren't squeezing that tube of toothpaste, getting that feces
work through. Or it has something to do with actually the physical length of the actual things as well, yes.
Is it possible that this accumulation of acid on the muscles within the intestine will jack them up and get them ripped over time to cure all motility issues, hence solving the root of the problem?
So the problem will solve itself.
Yes.
Yeah. You just get stronger pooping muscles.
Yeah. It just shoots out of the toilet.
Yeah. Like Kegels, but for your sphincter, right?
The good news is I no longer am foggy after eating. The bad news, we got to buy a new toilet. I blew the back off that thing. So they did an experiment where they gathered 30 people. So this is a fairly small N number, 22 of which had brain fogginess, 8 of which did not. And then they looked at them, and those 22 all had been taking probiotics, and they all seemed to have some form of motility issues that caused an out-of-control growth within the small intestine. That's really big news, because it means that this thing that we're seeing, that they're calling brain fogginess, which is pretty obscure and kind of catch-all term, might be a very common byproduct of too much probiotic use by people with an underlying bowel issue.
Did this fogginess come with any sense of euphoria? Because if so, I think there's a market for probiotics to the recreational drug community.
As a street drug.
Yeah, I like that. They're like instead of fogginess, like, oh, I feel really out of it and bloated, they're just like super high.
Quick, what are some street names for probiotics?
Poo pill.
I'll take the poo pill.
No Morpheus.
The red pill or the poo pill?
I said red or blue.
What's interesting is they wanted to try and treat these people within the sample group. So when they had the brain foggy patients stop taking the probiotics and take a course of antibiotics to wipe out the stuff that's in that small intestine, their brain fogginess resolved itself. So we went from correlation, hey, with these 22 people who have the brain fogginess also happen to be taking probiotics and have out of control growth here, to possible, though not completely definitive, causation, because now we've actually affected that independent variable. Do they still have that bacterial in their gut? No, they don't. We wiped it out with antibiotics and the symptoms go away. There could still be some confounding factors. Maybe there's other stuff going on still in the colon, large intestine, stomach, other things. But for now, we do have a plausible, not only correlational link, but possible and plausible causational link between probiotics and brain fogginess. Very interesting.
But it's not, probably it isn't all probiotics, right? Because there's like specific strains of bacteria that you get in certain probiotics and not others.
But they looked at a wide range of different over-the-counter stuff, and it wasn't that they found one specific brand was a particular bad one, because it seems like a broad class of bacteria that seem to exist in most over-the-counter probiotics tend to create the D-lactic acid.
Yeah, the lactobacillus and the bifidobacterium. I actually have some probiotics in my fridge right now.
Oh, go check it out.
And I read this article like last night, and then I mean, I didn't have like a freak out session, but I was a little worried.
Well, and they say, especially with, you know, something slowing down your gut, and they mention in that not only people with diabetes and gut issues, but kids, children, infants, and
because they happen, I mean, they have a smaller intestine, right?
Yeah, and so I happen to have been giving my son some probiotics because we wanted to make sure he was healthy, he was having some gut issues. I'm not doing that anymore. Like, yeah, I'm doing the same thing.
Or at least, like, peel it back a little bit, like, maybe once every week or something like that. Because I know that, you know, this is probably a balance issue and not just a black and white thing. You know, like, maybe sometimes you need to measure your bacteria, and if it's out of control, don't take the probiotic.
But it's also a thing where you get to a tipping point, because once that small intestine gets overly colonized by the bacteria, it's not going away by itself. Yeah, yeah. You're going to have to take antibiotics to get it to go away.
Bill, you said measure your bacteria, so imagining just going into your house, and you're a responsible person who measures the bacteria in his stool, and I go into the wrong room, and I see a series of Petri dishes under heat lamps.
Oh, I actually just... dates. I just spread it right on the wall. Yeah.
So that is something we're going to have to kind of figure out. Is this a dose issue? You know, is this like the early days of HIV treatment with AZT, where they were giving people way too much and it was really harming them? But AZT is still the drug we use now to help fight AIDS in a lot of places. It's just we had to change the dosage to a smaller dosage. Or is this a substantive issue like thalidomide, you know? Any thalidomide to a pregnant woman is bad. It doesn't matter. There's not a safe dosage. Is this one issue or the other? We need more research to figure it out for people with these issues. Now, if you don't have these issues, there still might be plenty of times where probiotics are still probably quite healthy for you. Again, in moderation, we want to make sure we're not colonizing that small intestine. But very interesting, because if you would have asked me last week, any downsides if I take too many probiotics? I'd be like, no, just get this dissolved in your gut. You're fine. That is different. That is changed. And anybody who takes it, gives it to their kids, or advises other people to take it should know about this study. Please share this with people.
Based on the motility thing, it seems like maybe that, like, if you are taking probiotics, you maybe also need to take some prebiotics, like some extra fiber to get it to move through the small intestine.
If that would be the thing that's slowing your motility down. Because there might also be conditions whereby it doesn't matter what you're taking in your diet. Your motility is going to be slower.
Sure.
And I think diabetes is like that.
Right.
All right, on to article number two, a brain area that causes pessimism and poor decisions. We call it the Damien area.
Thank you. I dressed all goth coming in today. Is nobody going to reference my face makeup and boots?
Obviously, we've talked about different regions of the brain. We talk about how they help solidify things like memory, kind of connote our experiences, how to interpret the world around us, take in sensory information. But we also know that there are certain clinical things that happen psychologically to people that either have depression or anxiety. And one of the things that happen to people in both of those subgroups is they tend to overweigh negative consequences to positive consequences. In terms of depressed people, they tend to look back on things that happened and really outweigh the things that happened negatively to them. And in terms of people with anxiety, they tend to look forward and overemphasize the negative effects of decisions they're about to make.
I've heard this called rumination.
Or paralysis by analysis. You know, they sit and they think about all the negative aspects of it. Whereas if you weren't in that mode, you would just look at it more realistically and be like, yeah, okay, I might get punched in the face, but I'm still going to go up and talk to that girl, because why not? You know, punch
what
in the
is
face
your pickup line, Bobby?
Like, punch me in the face.
Hi, Ronda Rousey. Can I grab your breast?
No, you missed it. I was going to say I might get punched in the face, or something bad might happen.
If I give you $100, will you punch me in the face and step on my genitals?
Researchers have been playing with this idea that this effect might be governed by the caudate nucleus, a small part in the kind of hind part of the brain. And in this test, they wanted to look in animal models at whether or not this particular part of the brain can be stimulated and studied to kind of replicate or better understand these effects of overweighing the negative. As you could call it, the trend towards pessimism.
Now, did they stimulate it by playing The Cure or something? Or
Yeah. They made the mice dress in all black.
Spike their hair out.
Robert Smith personally sang some ballads to stimulate.
They had some previous information that seemed to suggest that this part of the brain might be responsible for this. So what they decided to do is actually stimulate this. They did some studies in primates and in mice. And in these animal studies, they would actually stimulate this part of the brain, the caudate nucleus, and they would have these animals then make decisions. And it seemed like when these particular parts of the brain were stimulated, the animals would make decisions in line with overweighing the negative consequences of actions. It seemed to be a good animal model for both anxiety and depression that we could see from otherwise healthy animals. They're otherwise neurologically healthy, and then you could almost create a system whereby you could replicate both depression and anxiety in them.
The article said choosing to accept or reject conflicting offers.
Yes.
So it seems like they're like offering them something,
yes,
maybe
juice.
Like there's a bad outcome,
right,
and then they offer them that same thing again. They make the wrong choice over and over again.
They attack for this handle.
Well, yes. So the two outcomes, by the way, in this study, one was juice. That was a positive outcome. You press the button, you either get juice or you get a puff of air in the face. And that's the negative outcome.
Yeah.
So it was the idea of whether or not these creatures could assess. It was a, I think it was a random variable.
Okay.
And so if you had a neurologically typical animal, it would keep pressing because it would want the good thing. And the bad thing is not that bad. It's a puff of air in the face.
Sure.
Calm the fuck down, monkey. Come on. You should see what happened to your buddy who was in the Indiana Jones movie. That's some bad shit. So it would get one or the other. And it seems like by stimulating this part of the brain, they could get the animals to kind of get crazy, overthink, and get too anxious about the
which button do I press?
I really don't want that.
Are they good? I don't know.
I don't want monkey diabetes.
So basically, it seems to affect the cost-benefit analysis that we all do in our heads when we try and make a decision. And in this case, it skews it towards the negative. What's interesting about this is, one is, it might give us a little bit of an insight into what's going on in our own human brains, something that we can maybe affect by doing some kind of neural stimulation, maybe some kind of pharmaceutical stimulation, but if we can understand the root cause of these problems, it might be much easier to treat them. Secondarily, and what was compoundly interesting on this is, they also found that if you weren't shocking the brain or stimulating it, but just doing passive studies like fMRIs, the effects that was that were going on in that caudate nucleus would be reflective of the animal's decision-making. So as it became less anxious or whatever, you would see a different, I think it was actually beta waves coming out of the caudate nucleus, as opposed to when it was really
high. Beta waves are the like the standard waking brain waves.
Exactly.
Right? Like, so you're sleeping, there's some other kind of wave. When you're like, I don't know, super high meditator, you've got a different kind of wave.
Right.
Regular people have beta waves most of the time.
Yep. And when...
Stands for basic, by the way. You got basic waves, bitch.
So what they think is, hey, you can look at their brain, you can actually examine their brain and tell whether or not something is working to help combat their anxiety or depression. Because here's the problem. Whether using pharmaceutical agents, talk therapy, cognitive behavioral therapy, maybe even electrical stimulation, whatever you're using, if you're talking to somebody who's clinically depressed, has clinical anxiety, even if something is starting to work, it's not going to be like they just jump out of their chair and say, I'm cured.
Yeah, pharmaceuticals take like 60 days.
Yeah, so how do you know if it's working? If you have this objective measure of a trend towards a more healthy brain that is kind of acting in a way that we would expect normal brains to act because we know what the non-normal brains are doing, we could analyze you and be like, all right, well, we gave you the pills. They're starting to take effect. I know you don't feel anything yet. Let me show you these brainwave monitors. You're getting there. Oh, and by the way, we found it helps a little bit more if we add this other drug or we do this other therapy. We can see in real time.
Or we stick you with a needle in the brain.
Right, yeah.
Turn off the cure. Throw in some Andrew WK or something.
We can see in real time that this is working or this isn't working. Let's try a different thing. That's really neat because now we have not only the ability to affect animals and change this thing and maybe affect people, we have a diagnostic test to see whether or not what we're doing as therapy is affected. That's really important.
So you could actually find out if you're depressed in a similar fashion. You get a smog test.
I mean, you would know you're depressed already, but this would help you see if you were trending towards better or worse. It would also be done by an Armenian guy in a very dirty shop, by the way.
Yeah, you're depressed. I could hook you up with the deal on the stimulation, but either a shot.
DMV says you fail, but for extra $100. All right, those have been super awesome articles for this week. Let's move right on to a bit that everyone hates. Damien channels a dead scientist.
And now, Damien channels a dead scientist.
Oh, go fuck yourself.
Thank you very much, Bobby. Welcome to Damien channels a dead scientist. This is the portion of the show where I and our new fans may not know this, but I am a spiritual medium and I'm going to reach into the ether and grab a spirit. I don't know which spirit this is. I'm going to pull them down to Earth, but it will be a great scientific mind. Of this we know. And then I'm going to allow our two scientists here to pick his brain, which they rarely do. They usually attack him, from what I understand.
Yeah, we should have a parapsychologist here to monitor the ether for
us. Yeah, we'll get James Randy.
Unfortunately, I clock out.
Yes, in reality, audience, what he does is shakes around a little bit, says the word spirits, pretends to be a scientist, but then displays his lack of knowledge of basic scientific principles when we quiz him, proving that he is indeed not some spiritual embodiment of a scientist, but just Damien doing a very poor comedy bit. Damien, proceed.
Explain the accent then, Bobby.
I will. Go ahead.
Which pill do you want? The red pill, the blue pill, or the poo pill? Let's get it started. Spirits. Come to me. Yeah. Who has summoned the Lizard King?
The Lizard King?
Oh, apologies, gentlemen. I am a renowned chemist, Albert Hoffman.
Oh, Albert Hoffman, the guy who created LSD.
Yes, a.k.a. the Lizard King. Yes, you've heard of me. I see that I have been summoned by a, how do you say, well-endowed spiritual medium. I apologize for the confusion from earlier. I had assumed that I was appearing in another LSD spirit vision.
Anytime someone takes LSD, you pop into their spirit vision as some kind of crazy creature?
I own the trademark on LSD.
Okay, fair enough.
Or sometimes people do it to sneak me into Burning Man or something.
Okay.
You see, most people know me, Albert Hoffman, as the man who created LSD. LSD, sometimes called acid, blotter, California sunshine, maize, dots.
Maize!
please do not interrupt. No. Golden dragon, heavenly blue.
All right, we get it. We get it, Hoffman. You got a lot of names for acid.
I could keep going. My drug is quite prolific. Fine, I understand you do not want to know the street names for a drug that you are not cool enough to use. I discovered LSD while studying the medical plant Dreema matrima, or squill, and the fungus ergot, trying to examine their pharmacological capabilities. Little did I know that this work would cause so many to, what is the American saying, to trip over one's balls?
Yes, it did.
Clumsy balls?
Yes.
Is that the term?
That's what we call it, clumsy balls.
Yes. There's a term back home in Sweden called clumsy balls. However, it means something very different. And
that's interesting because you're from Switzerland, but keep going.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did I say I clearly know that I am from Swiss? Of course, that's why I'm speaking with a German accent.
Yes,
I would be speaking like some sort of Muppets character if I was a Swedish
that would be what scientist. You'd be doing. Pretty trite.
Where was I? Oh, yes, clumsy balls. Yes, yes, yes. In the old world, it means something much more anti-Semitic. I first synthesized LSD on 16 November 1938. I was studying a way to obtain a respiratory and circulatory stimulant that would not affect the uterus. However, I had to put the work aside for 5 years because the uterus that we were using in the study was a rental and had to be returned.
Okay.
However, in 1943, despite the war, we were able to secure another uterus and resume study.
Where was this uterus located?
A good scientist does not reveal his sources. He is like a reporter. However, while resynthesizing the LSD, I accidentally ingested some of the compound. Soon afterwards, I found myself remarkably restless and slightly dizzy. Soon afterwards, I found myself protesting Vietnam, even, which confused many of my peers, as it was just an undeveloped Southeast Asian nation at that point. And when they'd ask me, I'd just say, fucking LBJ, man.
Which is a lazy blowjob at the moment.
Yes, I do not like a lazy blowjob. My mind is very active. I need an active blowjob. I'm sorry, I got uncharacteristically heated there. LBJ does that to me. After my discovery, my employer made me head of the natural products department, and I used that position to travel all over the world, seeking other sources of drugs that would facilitate clumsy balls or similar symptoms. I discovered psychedelic mushrooms, as well as their active compounds.
Well, you didn't discover them because the natives had been using them for a long time. You just looked at, you discovered what the active compound
was. I did what white
was.
European scientists have done for many years and claim credit for something that existed before I got there. So yeah, I discovered shrooms. So, you know, you're welcome for that sweet college experience.
Yeah, that actually was pretty cool. Good job, Hoffman. What else?
I wrote a book, LSD, Mean Sorenkind. Well, I'm sorry, I forget that not all everybody speaks German. LSD, My Problem Child.
Oh, okay. Is that it? Is there anything else you want to say before we ask you questions to prove that you are just Damien pretending to be?
I mean, there was much more to my life than my creating of one compound. I created many other things, and I also macro-dosed on the reg, so my mental health was great.
Yeah, well, okay, fair enough.
I am macro-dosing right now.
You could just say dosing. If it's not a micro-dose, that's what it is. All right, now is the point where we ask you questions to see if you are Damien or Mr. Hoffman. Would you like to take it, Bill? What question?
I heard a story about the day that you accidentally dosed, and I'd like to know how you got home after you accidentally dosed.
I drove home.
Drove home?
Yes.
Okay. It's some kind of vehicle.
Are you referring to bicycle day or bike day?
Yes.
Because that was the first intentional ingesting of LSD.
He is right. That was actually a few days later because he had accidentally got it like in his eye when he was testing and a small amount.
And I did drive home that day. I had to lay down when I got home. But bicycle day was the very first intentional ingesting. Well, I have batting 1,000%, as the American saying goes. I think I might want to leave on a high note while I've proven
myself.
Well,
let me just ask you this. When you finally did do bicycle day, because the other was an incidental form of ingestion, this was purposeful, What dose did you give yourself?
That would be 250 milligrams.
Oh, that's actually quite correct.
Thank you. I know. And listen, I could sit here all day and prove that I am who I am, officer.
I would like you to do that. And what your criticism later on of the movement about using LSD more frequently, one of the things you thought was a problem was that people were using too much. And what were the doses that you felt were too much?
I know anything over 500 milligrams is way too much. And I know that Zolzin's a hippie movement, despite my agreeing with them on Vietnam, took way too much, and I think they really discredited LSD as a whole and got it banned.
Oh, okay. That's actually pretty accurate. He did think that 500 was the dose that people were overdoing it with.
And now, on that note, I'm sorry. It's such a long trip back to the afterlife. I think I should go.
Let me just ask one more question. One quick question. As a chemist, please explain the difference between a covalent bond and an ionic bond.
An ionic bond is the first dance that a Jewish boy receives after his bar mitzvah.
Boom!
Of course, that was a joke answer.
Not Albert Hoffman.
I am European. Of course, I'm anti-Semitic. Of course, I know what Jews do. That was a joke.
We proved that it's not you, Albert. Get on out of here.
I will leave this world. Covalent bond is what happens when two atoms love each other very much.
Get out of here.
All right. Ad vitesen. Goodbye. okay, I'm back. How was it, audience? And I feel pretty accomplished.
Surprisingly well. We should come up with better controls, I think.
Yeah, I absolutely think so. But we ended up proving that it was fake in the end. So thank you very much.
This has been Damien Channels, the Dead Scientist. And yes, I do count it as a win.
Oh, thank you, audience, for coming back for Science Faction 249, where you learned about parapsychology, how probiotics might be problematic, why some brains are more pessimistic than others, and all about that sweet, sweet acid. Thank you so much for joining us, and come on back this Thursday for Science Faction 250.
Hello, Alex Jones. I wanted to let you know that it is actually LSD that is turning the frogs gay.
You've been listening to Science Faction. Wait, that's not right.